Welcome to Write Now with Scrivener, where writers talk about how they work, how they develop their ideas, and how they use Scrivener, the app built for long-form writing projects. I'm your host, Kirk McElhern, author of Take Control of Scrivener. Today, I'm happy to welcome Debbie Urbanski. Debbie is a writer of short stories and essays, and she has recently published her first novel entitled Afterworld, which is a science fiction novel about, I don't know, it's a post-apocalyptic AI take over the world kind of everything goes bad. Is that a good description?
Everything goes well for the planet. I think that's important to mention.
Very interesting. Yeah, because you have been writing essays and short stories, and a lot of your work is sort of environmental, and you've been writing nature writing, and that's kind of interesting that you're writing a post-apocalyptic novel, mostly about AI, and yet parts of it feel like nature writing.
That's a great compliment. Thank you. Yeah, I spent a lot of time on the nature descriptions. I'm kind of surrounded by guidebooks about birds and trees and plants. I was really interested in the idea that if we go away, if humans go away, that the world would be okay. So I kind of wanted to explore that. There'd be a lot of other losses, but especially from an AI perspective, it might be the easiest way to save the planet is having our physical body.
It's interesting because that term save the planet isn't, when people say that, they usually mean save humans, but there's a lot more to the planet than just humans.
Yes. And just like the end of the world often means the end of us, right? So some people call my novel about the end of the world, but it's really not. It's about the end of humanity's physical presence on Earth.
Some years ago, I read a book, and I'm sure you're going to tell me what it was, about what would happen if there were no more humans, about how everything would grow back and nature would take over. Do you remember that?
Yeah, The World Without Us.
That's right.
By Alan Weisman, I think. Yeah, that was a great book. And I think, yes, that was where there's an interview with a scientist who talks about human extinction really casually. And that kind of gave me the idea for Afterworld, because he's saying all species go extinct, humans are going to go extinct. And essentially that's okay. That's part of the process. Life's going to continue on. Yeah, it's a great book.
You seem like a very happy person. You must be a lot of fun at parties when you're talking about your novel. How do people take it when you say, yes, my novel's about human extinction? I know that post-apocalyptic fiction is quite a popular genre these days, but don't people look askance when you tell them that?
People have called my book bleak. It is true. I guess I always point out, you know, that I do find it hopeful that the world is still around and all the species, like so many species are around. I don't think humans are necessarily exceptional or more important than other species. So there is the idea in the book, you know, we're one species and we could save, I don't know, is it millions of species? But I don't think we should disappear. But I do think it's an interesting thought experiment to kind of get out of our heads and value other parts of the world.
I live in a rural area. I live next to a farm on the edge of a village of 100 people. And during lockdown, the number of animals and birds that we saw was so much more than we had seen before. And that makes it easy to imagine if there weren't too many humans, how nature would thrive.
Right. Yeah. Chernobyl, there's places on Earth, like the city near Chernobyl. There's some great photographs online about it and like a nature preserve now, you know.
Yeah. So I found a description of your novel. I think it was from an interview that you made. What's unique about Afterworld? It's narrated by an AI that is trying, after humans have gone extinct, to write the life story of the last human on Earth. And unlike most climate fiction, my novel imagines an ecocentric solution to climate change where humans are considered just one species among millions of equally important species. What led you to that? Other than the book we discussed before, what led you to imagine that, the last human? Because that's kind of a Twilight Zone episode, isn't it? The last human on Earth.
Yeah, I think there might have been a Twilight Zone episode about it.
There were a lot of them,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Well, I love post-apocalyptic fiction. So I read a lot. I've read a lot of it. I read a lot of it. But at the end, you know, we're generally usually okay with a very few exceptions. I remember The Girl with All the Gifts. the ending of that book actually made me gasp because I couldn't believe, I won't say what the ending is, but I couldn't believe the author actually did what they did. And kind of he backs off on that a little bit in the second book. But that never felt real to me that, you know, in all apocalyptic situations we're going to be fine. So I wanted to explore that a little bit. And I guess I was curious about the mind space of, especially if it was a teenage girl, you know, what she'd be experiencing. There's also a book called The Wall by Marlon Haushofer, which influenced me a lot. And it's an Austrian book. It just got reissued. And it is about a woman who lives in a cabin by herself. She might be the last person on Earth. It's not clear, but I thought that kind of gave me permission to write a really solitary book too.
So one of the main elements, technologies in your book is AI. And if you didn't say you started writing this in 2019, everyone would say, oh, you're just jumping on the AI bandwagon. But you were, not that AI is new, but AI to the general public is quite new. What, about a year, a little more than a year ago when we started discovering ChatGPT. Why were you prompted back in 2019 to introduce this into the novel?
Well, I'll be honest. My first agent thought my book was too fragmented and thought there needed to be a cohesive narrator. And so we were brainstorming, you know, all humans are gone, who could tell our story? Because I was interested from that perspective. And AI was floating around. I don't think anyone thought it would. I mean, anyone who wasn't involved in tech thought it would be happening so quickly. But AI came up, you know, aliens or I don't know. Other ideas were more fantastical. So we were interested in the AI idea. So I was kind of floored when I started, you know, I got early access to GPT-3 and was able to play around with AI while I was, my novel had already been written, but I was still kind of doing final edits for editors.
And how do you feel about the way generative AI is sort of omnipresent today?
I'm probably more pro AI than most writers or people. I guess if I had to pick a big concern, it'd be the planet. And I think AI could do, I mean, it is doing a lot of good. Even so, there's the generative language AI, but AI is being used in so many other cool ways, you know. And I found it useful when I was writing towards the end to as like a sounding board or if I needed to make up fake citations for future books, there's a lot of those in my novel. It was, you know, give me a magazine title from, you know, that deals with whale language or something, you know.
Yeah, but half the time they make it up. So I write for the Scrivener blog, and I wrote an article about daydreaming recently, and I asked GPT to give me some quotes by famous authors about daydreaming. And there was a quote from J.K. Rowling. It's a quote from Stephen King in On Writing, which I have on Kindle, so I could search for the exact quote, and it wasn't there. And I said, it's not there. Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. He's talked about daydreaming, but there is no precise quote. So if you ask for anything precise, you don't know what you're going to get.
Yes. So this was early on before the hallucinations were a thing. And I was asking for quotes similar to you. I like quotes in post-apocalyptic novels about friendship or something. I wanted to quote into my novel. And at first I didn't know it was making them all up, but it was giving me quotes from the road, these touchy-feely quotes from The Road about a man. And I was thinking, so I looked in Kindle, my Kindle version, and yeah, so I don't think it's good for that sort of like factual stuff, but for I was asking it to make things up for me, you know, and it did well, or just, I don't know, grammar, copy editing questions. Somehow it helped me figure out if I wanted to put a comma here, you know, what the difference would be in meaning.
So in preparing for this interview, I asked GPT-4 to give me some questions to ask you.
That's really fun.
Well, it is. And because I'm not going to ask all of them, but they're relatively pertinent. And so, for example, the concept of documenting the end of humanity is a poignant one. What do you believe is the importance of storytelling and record keeping in the face of extinction?
That's a heady question.
And it's well worded, too, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I will answer that. I used GPT to interview me for my book, Verbally. And It asked some questions. I was like, I don't know. That's just, you know, I can't answer that off the top of my head. So the importance of, to get back to your question, the importance of storytelling. I mean, that's really what my book is about, kind of. So that's an excellent question, where that's the AI narrator kind of uses that as a way to fall in love or care deeply for Sen, last human on Earth. So, and then it's a way for the AI narrator to understand humanity too, by learning to tell a story.
And we don't want to spoil the book, whether humanity is understood or anything like that. I want to try another one. How did your personal experiences, such as your time in nature and your thoughts on motherhood, shape the narrative and themes of Afterworld?
It's another right-on question.
These are good questions. They are. And I'm assuming it's because you've given a lot of interviews. You've got information on your website. So it's able to find enough themes to put questions together. I find it actually slightly uncanny that these questions are spot on.
And thoughtful and open-ended. For nature, so I hike a lot. I started taking macro photography in during the pandemic. And I think both of those things just make me really appreciate how cool and amazing and complex nature is, you know, just as fascinating as humans in a lot of ways, I think. Looking at plants close up or insects close up, I just had no idea. Dandelions were super pretty, you know, they're just gorgeous plants. For motherhood, so I have two kids and I'm interested in non-traditional portrayals of motherhood, just because my experience, I don't think has been, it wasn't what I expected motherhood to be. I love being a mother, but it was a lot more, it was more challenging than I'd expected. So I was, and especially in post-apocalyptic fiction, sometimes mothers are seen as heroes, right? I was interested in kind of pushing the boundaries there and exploring what I thought two mothers might do at the end of the world when they know humanity's dying out.
That all sounds so sad. I like post-apocalyptic fiction quite a bit. Ever since probably I read The Stand back in, the late 70s after it first came out. And it's true that a lot of post-apocalyptic novels just take the hero's journey and translate it into a desolate landscape.
Yep. And they're usually exceptional people often, you know, who the story centers on, right? And I don't have any of those skills. So I kind of wanted to write about a character who was like me in some ways.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how you used Scribner to write your novel, Afterworld. Writing a book, screenplay, or even a long article is a juggling act. You need to find the right words and the right structure, keep track of research, and refer to notes. Tailor-made for long writing projects, Scrivener is the go-to app for writers of all types. Scrivener combines a typewriter, binder, and corkboard in a single app. A project outline makes it easy to get an overview of your work and flip between sections. Refer to research alongside your writing, and just drag and drop to rearrange your work. Write in any order in sections as large or small as you like and let Scrivener stitch it all together when you're ready to share your words with the world. With Scrivener, you'll find everything you need to start writing and keep writing. Scrivener is available for Mac, Windows, iPad, and iPhone. Download the free trial from ScrivenerApp.com. Right now with Scrivener, listeners can get a 20% discount with the coupon code PODCAST. That's ScrivenerApp.com. Okay, we want to talk about how you use Scrivener, because what did you say before we started recording? How much you love Scrivener?
I really love Scrivener, and I recommend it to, you know, writers whenever I can, because I think it, I don't think it influences how I write, but it kind of captures how I write. It's like a perfect fit for how I write. And maybe it did influence how I write. I don't know, but I love it. Yeah.
That's interesting, because most of the people I've interviewed say something like that they'd been writing one way, and then when they discovered Scrivener, it matches the way they think. The last guest I had called it writing a book from the inside out, and I found that really memorable, that you can start anywhere and move around and go back and forth without scrolling and scrolling and scrolling.
Yes. I had a, when my editor shifted things to Word, it made me wish the publishing industry would use Scrivener too, because my thinking, like even thinking in Word was just, it was really difficult for me. Like the endless scrolling, you know, and the fact I couldn't color coordinate my comments or.
You sent me a link by email of the first Scrivener file containing 4 years of work on your novel. And you say that the amount of files is due in part from me needing to rewrite, heavily revise my manuscript for Agent 1, Agent 2, Agent 3, Editor 1, Editor 2, and Editor 1B. That sounds a bit like a rocky road to publication. Do you want to quickly go through the three agents and three editors and what happened?
Sure.
It wasn't because of you or your novel, was it?
No, I just think I was unlucky. And I don't think this is a regular experience, publishing experience either, though it does happen. This sort of stuff does happen, just maybe not to the same person. So it's hard to find an agent. I found an agent who I really liked. She was a newer agent, and we worked really well together. She was really collaborative, and she decided she wanted to be a child psychologist, which was heartbreaking. She had an older, kind of established mentor agent who she said I could work with, and we tried, but this agent was more commercial than I was and not into science fiction. So it was hard, but it would have been a very different book. So in comes agent three, my current agent, who's really wonderful, Kate Garrick. She's into kind of, I think she says she likes weird stuff. So, you know, it's a good fit. and my first editor, is amazing. He's also my current editor. We worked really well together. He's the one who bought my book. He left, to head Simon & Schuster, fiction. And that meant my, novel's orphaned, which I had never heard before, but if you Google it, it's not good, you know, like nothing. It's a kind of like a scary word. People don't really talk about it.
Is it like something being optioned for a movie and then just sits around and nothing happens to it?
You do get assigned to someone new, and that person, you know, doesn't have an emotional connection to your novel. They're not the one who bought it. It could be kind of forced onto them. So stuff still happens. It just might not be the stuff you, you know, agreed to when you're novel is bought. So she's a lovely editor who I worked with. It's just had to do a total rewrite. AI was no longer the narrator. There was now a human narrator. And after that rewrite, it still wasn't working for her. So I had some big decisions to make, but decided in the end, and I was able to do this. I went back to my old editor at Simon & Schuster, but that also required another rewrite. Along the way, agent three wanted me to do a rewrite. The editor one wanted a rewrite. Editor two wanted a rewrite. So I was surprised, you know, I didn't realize writing a novel would be so collaborative, but I learned a lot. I kind of tried to take it as a master class in novel writing.
It's very interesting because most people, if it's their first novel, they want to find an agent. And if they find an agent, they say, oh my God, I've got an agent and this is it and everything's going to be perfect. But as you said, the second agent wasn't a fit, didn't like it, you don't get along. The thing with multiple editors, that's probably a little bit rarer, but it happens. It happens. You get bounced around.
Yeah.
Do you feel that after all this, your novel is better for this? Because it's quite an extraordinary novel. It's gotten very good reviews. Do you think that it's all of the complication that made it what it was?
Editor 1B, if I called him that, when I finally got back to him and he read the final revision, he did say it felt like something happened. Like maybe I got to the point, I don't know. I think I was ready to take a lot of risks, and I also didn't really care. Like I had already thought maybe I'm just going to pull my novel and never publish it. Like I had gotten to that point. So I think like the ending of the novel is pretty gutsy. It's like surreal, and I really love it, but I don't know if I would have had the courage to write that early on. But I think it did help to get to the point thinking like, if the novel doesn't make it into the world, I'm fine with that. Like, I just want to have something I like.
So tell me about how you use Scrivener. You emailed me and you told me about the many features you use, and I know you have a list ready.
Yes. I've been working on a short story collection for a while too. So I found it, I use it for, I kind of have a document for essays, a document for short stories. No, I'm sorry. It's like a file. I have a separate file.
Project.
Yes, a separate project for all these things. Project, for ideas. And then I have my, novel stuff. When I was working on the short story collections, I found it so useful to be able to, it's so easy to move stuff around. So that seemed a really natural fit. I had all the stories I've ever written, which is a lot of stories. And then I was able to make groupings of them, move them around. That's been really helpful.
To see how they would flow in a collection.
Exactly. Yeah. And you could, it might be like control clicking on the left. So I'd be able to say, okay, I want to see these 10 files together. And, or no, I want to change the first story. So really fluid. With the novel stuff, because it had been, I had so many revisions. I kept them all in one project, but I had different kind of big folders for each one. And so it was really easy for me to compare like the sixth revision, chapter two, with first revision, chapter two. And I used the split screen a lot. I also, my novel does braided narratives. So there's like different threads going through the novel. So the color coordination really helped. It sounds small, but it was really a lifesaver. Because then again, I'd be able to control click on see all the one narrative, or I could just make sure that I'm braiding them correctly. I also use color for the comments, and it drove me nuts when I went to Word because I'd have comments for questions I had to ask different people, like my agent, my editor, myself, my husband. He was like my technical advisor. Or then I had a different color for descriptions I had to fill in. Or and I also, so my setup for my novel was usually the split screen, and then I used the sketch pad. And then I used the bookmarks. Those two were hovering. So I was able to display a lot of information. And with the bookmarks, all my research was like marked as a bookmark, so I could easily go through and see like my notes on cabins or my notes on plants around the cabin. Or and there was a cool feature I discovered it towards the end called focus mode. And it's where you could look at just a line, a sentence or a paragraph all at once. And that was mind blowing when I really love that when I'm looking at stuff at the word level. I did it sentence by sentence, but it really let me stop and think about like, just do I like the words of the sentence, and not even it just kind of focus in.
Did you discover the focus mode thing where you can only show dialogue and quotes?
No, how do you do that?
I'll send you a link to an article about it.
Okay.
Basically, you dim everything that's not in quotes, so you can read all your dialogue and ignore all of the narrative in between the
Oh,
different phrases.
I love that. That's really cool. So, and
Well,
I
now
keep,
you're going to have that for your next novel, which is going to have to be dialogue heavy now.
I love dialogue. So, yeah, I feel like I keep discovering things about Scrivener, which is one thing I love. Like whatever you, I try to tell this to my friends, it's functional at whatever level. But when you feel like you need to do something and you dig deep, usually it's there. There's an extra tool that helps you.
Okay, I have another GPT question for you. Finally, as a writer who has explored both short stories and a novel, can you share how your writing process differs between the two formats and what you enjoy about each? I'm going to use this GPT guy for other interviews in the future. I mean, I only thought about it today because you talk about using it and AIs in the book, but I'm going to use this in the future.
I mean, they're great questions, right?
Yeah.
I'm starting on my next novel, and I'm hoping that the process is going to go more smoothly. But I'm not sure it will. I think I start by having a lot of small pieces of text and maybe a collage method. And that is kind of how I'm writing my next novel, where I don't have a big outline or anything. I don't even know where it's going usually, and I don't know where my short stories are going. Or that's what I love about writing, though, is trying to figure out what's going to happen through the writing process. So I guess they're pretty similar, to be honest.
It's a bit easier with a short story to be a pantser, someone who doesn't plan, because you're only doing 3,000 or 5,000 or 8,000 words, and you don't have a longer story arc to worry about, right?
Yeah, I think though, I think I approach the novel the same as my short stories, which might make it a more messy process, but that's probably why it took me 8 years to write it.
It sounds like that's your mindset, that you need that from everything you've said, that you need it to be, I don't know that messy is the right word, you need it to be not in a box.
Yes, I do literally print stuff out and place it on the floor behind me and reorder. And one time I did open the windows just to let things blow around. It wasn't working. So I was like, I don't care. It's just gonna end up and then I'll shuffle it together. And
Yeah, that's an age-old technique from back from the Dadaists who used to do that. Used to cut things up and put them together at random. Okay, I like to ask my guest if they have a book that they can recommend, something that they've read recently or something that they really like. You've already mentioned a few, but is there anything you can think of that really stands out for you?
I love reading plays. We were talking about dialogue-heavy work. And the last play I read was Don King, The Trials. It's a climate play, and it's about adults are on trial, adults like you and me, regular adults, and the jury is made up of teenagers, and they're deciding whether we're guilty and whether we should get the death sentence. So it was super intense and just kind of mind-blowing. It's a great read.
You must be a lot of fun at parties with your reading list there.
Yes, that the play was particularly bleak, but really thought-provoking, and I'm trying to get my daughter to read it. I think teenagers would connect with it a lot.
Oh, they would love for any chance to give death sentences against their parents, right? Is your next novel a post-apocalyptic or climate fiction or something in that vein?
I want it to be has something to do with the climate. I'm playing around with sperm whales, because we're starting to get to talk to sperm whales maybe through AI. So sperm whales, or like the history of land, or maybe ghosts. So
Okay, that's three very different things. But I guess,
yes, I'm trying to write three novels at
well, but
once.
all
I will
three
see
of
how
them
that
are in Moby Dick, aren't they?
Which is on my reading list. You're right.
Debbie Urbanski, your novel is Afterworld. I want to thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much.
If you like the podcast, please follow it in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. To learn more about Scrivener, go to scrivenerapp.com. Join us next month for another conversation on Right Now with Scrivener.